in the news over the last number of months, we've been hearing about a community, actually probably a number of years, we've been hearing about a community over in British Columbia called Bountiful. And on the phone with us, I think currently down in Utah, actually, is the bishop of, I think the right phraseology is a Mormon polygamous community in Bountiful, British Columbia, Mr. Winston Blackmore. And Winston, I sure appreciate the time you've given us here in the Drew Marshall Show. Thanks for joining us.
Well, you're sure welcome.
Now, you know, I know you've dealt with the press a number of times. You've been asked the hard questions, the roundabout questions, the try-to-get-you-trapped questions. And I purposely do not have any notes in front of me. I haven't done a whole lot of research because I simply wanted to speak with someone who has been in, who's involved in the polygamous lifestyle and ask them how and why and where does this come from? Because, you know, the rest of us have a hard time understanding this, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I guess, first of all, tell us a little bit about Bountiful. Can you set it up for us? What if I was to walk into the community of Bountiful, what would I experience? What would I see?
I don't even think you'd know you were there.
Okay.
We don't have any walls, any gates, any signs.
So it's not a fortress or compound or anything?
Oh, no, it isn't. It's just an extension of the beautiful community in the Crescent Valley. And, you know, unless you actually started to run across some of our people, you wouldn't know you were even there.
Okay, so not going to really notice any difference. Do you all dress sort of interestingly? Do you sort of have that Amish Mennonite sort of look, or do you just dress normally, for lack of a better term?
We dress normally for us.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not quite as normal as everyone else does.
So explain that to me. Would I see you and think, oh, yeah, they're part of that community, simply by what you wear?
I suppose some do, but, you know, I've traveled around, too, and we aren't so shockingly dressed that we stick out that much. But.
Right, right. Okay. How else would I recognize you? If you say I walk into the community, I wouldn't really notice I was in a different community. What are the things that I would see where I would go, hold on, there's something different here?
Oh, probably. We have a lot of children everywhere, and, you know, there's kind of a beehive of activity going on all the time, but it wouldn't be too difficult to discover, particularly if you're looking for it, you know, that you were there.
Okay, all right. Let's go into how you got exposed or how you first got into the polygamous lifestyle. Was this something you were born into?
Yes, I was. Polygamy was a part of the fundamental basic belief of the Mormon people, and you know, it was, I think, as early as 1831 in our church, and you know, of course, you know, there's still many, many people who are polygamous Mormons, even though they did away with the practice in 1890. But I think there's an estimated some 30,000 to 50,000 polygamists in Utah and Arizona.
Okay, all right. Now, in Canada, though, is not polygamy illegal?
Actually, Canada has a law against polygamy.
Yeah, so that would make it illegal.
They made it against the Mormons. But, you know, our charter, as we read the charter, that the charter strikes down any law that's made against an identifiable group based on a discrimination tactic, and we certainly feel that law, since it was made against the Mormons, discriminates against our religion.
So you're saying that the polygamy law was brought in specifically against the Mormons, and now that Canada has moved on into something like Bill C-38, et cetera, which was there to protect, probably more than any other group, the same-sex or same-gendered couples, et cetera, you would say that this would protect you folks as well?
Well, I think that it would be a blatant discrimination against us if
they were to press charges or something.
If they were to try to you know, have that bill and then do something against our religious, our basic religious beliefs.
Right.
We're born this. Our community is second and third generation people who live this practice. And you know, it's not so only of the 1,125 different cultures in the world. 875 of those cultures are polygamous.
Right, right. Well, one of the reasons we've got you on the show today is to sort of ask you, Winston, how do you justify it spiritually? Do you use the Book of Mormon as your mainstay, or do you use the Bible as your mainstay? I mean, how do you justify polygamy spiritually?
Well, how can you read the Old Testament and not justify polygamy? Abraham was a polygamist, and Jacob was a polygamist, and Moses was a polygamist, and you know, the book, even the Book of Genesis, I mean, tells that story. But the Bible itself, the Old Testament, talks about a whole bunch of people that the Lord loved, and those people were polygamists.
Right.
And you know, and I think that since the New Testament, the mission of the apostles and Christ never took any opportunity to correct the Old Testament, then we certainly have good justification for our lifestyle.
Okay, so you're saying that the New Testament doesn't speak out against polygamy and doesn't speak out or change what we saw in the Old Testament.
That's what I'm saying, and I don't know where it does, and I'm sure there's far better scriptorians out there in your listening audience than I am, but I don't justify my religion from the Bible, but those are justifications.
Right.
We do have, you know, I never made my religion. I was born into it, and I was raised in a multiple family, and I have one myself, and I just haven't seen anything that's better than what we've got.
So would you say the Book of Mormon would be more of your mainstay, the book that you would adhere to mostly, as opposed to the Bible?
No, I actually love the Bible, too, and I share my reading time between the Bible and the Book of Mormon. I think they complement each other.
Right. Do you see contradictions between the Book of Mormon and the Bible, or no?
Not anything that's really that I have a difficulty with.
Right.
The Book of Mormon does speak against, you know, it does make a statement against to the people at that time, the practice of them going out and having a whole bunch of wives and concubines as a practice that God needs to direct in their life, and I totally agree with that.
So do you have, Winston, do you have wives and concubines?
No, my folks aren't concubines.
No, you're sorry, you said
I was just referring to that in the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, well, I mean, we certainly read about Solomon, who had 700 wives and 300 private prostitutes known as concubines, basically, so... That seemed to be a reality back then, and I was just wondering if the polygamous community had ever considered having a bunch of private prostitutes as well, because of the correlation between that and the Old Testament.
It certainly has never been a part of our culture that I was ever aware of.
Right.
I know that there are abuses. There have been all kinds. There's all kinds of abuses in any society, in any culture.
What do you mean? What do you mean abuses?
Well, I think that there are people who have not been loyal to their vows. They've not been loyal, even if they were polygamous vows. They may have had some mistresses, but you know, I think we could find a lot of that happening in Canada in a monogamous system, you know?
Right, right. Winston, how many wives do you have?
Well, my standard, I don't really discuss that with a lot of people, but I have enough so that I don't chase other people's wives, you know?
Okay. All right.
And my family is very precious to me. And
sure. So is that?
I read all kinds of things in the newspaper, and there, lots of them are not even close to being accurate.
No, there's not a lot of accuracy or accurate reporting out there. I'm sorry, Winston. Was that an awkward question for me to ask? Should I not have asked how many wives do you have? Is that a bad?
Well, that you know, to me, that takes away from the point. The point of the matter is that we're talking about polygamy, and my family is organized that way. I was born into a multiple family situation. I've never known anything else in my life, and as a minister and ministering for people, I advocate for those who want to enter into the same kind of relationship, and I do my very best to help them qualify that situation so that it will endure and that it will be meaningful and valuable to them, and that's just how I spend my ministry, and I don't have any quarrel with if someone wants to be to live in a strictly monogamous relationship. I think that they should go forward and faithfully and carefully and prayerfully, since this is a Christian radio, be faithful and true to their vows.
Right.
That's just how I feel.
Right. Okay, there are a series of questions that go through someone's head when they think about polygamy, and one thing they think of is wow, okay, so maybe two wives. I don't know, is there a different reaction if you said you have two wives than if you maybe said you have, 12 wives or 15 wives or 28 wives?
Well, the sensational side of people is that, what do they think if a guy says he has five wives? Well, all of a sudden, the interest of most people is, wow, you must have five bedrooms, and forget the reality of living in a culture like that we live in, where a person has a multiple family is probably far more intense than any other society. I mean, it means lots of doing lots more things other than just the visual things that come to your mind.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I mean,
your children and your education and your fun days and your birthdays and your hockey and your swimming and your everything that goes along with a family. And believe me, it's no simple and small thing to have the kind of family structure that we have, but it is a very rewarding and a growing and can be a very wonderful experience.
Sure.
and yet it can be very intense.
Well, we're on the phone with Winston Blackmore, who is the bishop of a Mormon polygamous community in Bountiful, BC. Did I use all the terms right there?
Well, that's good enough.
That's good enough, okay. Well, I mean, I don't mean you any disrespect by simply saying it the way that I kind of have figured it out, so I hope you understand that. And I guess the one of the things that goes through maybe men's minds is, okay, sex with different women is one thing, but what about the, most guys out there these days are having a hard time putting up with the wives, I don't know, nagging or hassling or henpecking or trying to change the man or trying to make the man more sensitive. You know what I'm talking about, right? So one guy would say, wow, boy, this guy's lucky. He gets to have sex with different women. And another guy goes, what are you, nuts? He's married to them. How crazy is that?
I will say I hear both sides of that equation from a lot of friends that I have in the community at large. Our religion and our lifestyle is about anything but just how much sex you can have with so many different women, because I have friends who are not a part of our lifestyle that have all kinds of opportunities in the communities at large to go find them that kind of comfort. But our focus is about our families, and it's about our lifestyle, and it's about our values and our tradition, and that's what our focus
is.
Sure.
Well, Winston, I mean, you've been asked this a million times too, the whole jealousy factor. How does that work? I mean, are you seriously going to try to convince me that these women don't get kind of persnickety about who's going to be with you and when they're going to be with you, and you're spending more time with this person? I'm not sure where the word persnickety came from, but you know what I mean?
I've heard it before.
Okay, just checking. Sometimes things come out of my mouth, I think, how old am I, man? Anyway, you know what I mean? That just seems
I would be totally lying to you, Drew, if I said that there wasn't jealousy issues in our kind of society, because, fundamentally, we're still people. And yet, I've seen lots of situations where there was just as much jealousy in a monogamous family, for whatever reason, that a man had to deal with jealousies than there was in a situation with three or four wives, and yet I've also seen the other side of the equation too. It can be a very frustrating situation, and time and circumstances make the difference.
Now, what about the women? Let's switch this around. Are the women allowed to have different, multiple husbands? No, right?
No, they're not. Not in our fundamental, in our fundamental faith, they're not.
So some would say, okay, let's talk about 1 Corinthians 13, love is not possessive, love is not jealous, all the love chapter, right? I mean, you know, you go through that list and you think, oh my goodness, you know, basically what it sounds like is you get to have whatever you want and they don't.
Yeah, but still, that's not really correct too, because can you really tell me that you know a whole bunch of people who completely fulfill 1 Corinthians, that chapter on love? I mean,
no.
The reality of it is that no matter who you are, I don't know of any person who has never been jealous at one point,
right,
in their life, men and women. In fact, it's been my experience that men are far worse at jealousy than women are.
But the love is self-serving aspect. I mean, that's a continuum in your lifestyle, because if you're allowed to have multiple wives and they're not allowed to have multiple husbands, it certainly does seem like a self-serving aspect, does it not?
Well, I guess, you know, the other day I was clicking some channels, checking on the hockey scores, and I got onto a panel out of Toronto, somebody who's commissioned by the University of Toronto, I think, to do a little study on polyamorous relationships. This woman who's doing this study has three men, and yet her partner that's going with her has one. You know, he wants their relationship to be monogamous. And, you know, I think when that one comes out, it'll be really interesting, because, you know, that's a whole another avenue of polygamy, only backwards as far as I'm concerned. It tweaked my interest, because on one hand, we crow about the fact that polygamy is illegal, and on the other hand, we're doing a study on, you know, polyamorous relationships.
Right, right. Now, if I understand things right, let's talk about the children here. The children that come out of these relationships, do the boys get pulled out into sort of other subgroups of themselves? And then, like, at what age are people married off? Because there's this concern that I did read a little bit about this lost boys syndrome. You've heard that phrase a million times. These boys that get brought up and their choices, you can either start your marriage stuff pretty early on in life, or you kind of remain part of this camp that's kind of pulled aside from everybody. Is there any truth to that? Did I say that right?
Well, there are, you know, I don't know how to identify with that really, but to say that there aren't a lot of lost boys, that you know, I believe that there are boys who are really frustrated and can't understand where, you know, the new extreme FLDS version that we were involved in, it's taken a departure quite differently than our traditional roots, but I really don't know how to speak for them, because I'm not a part of that, and yet, you know, there are boys who, you know, and I know lots of them that have made some contact and have wished that, you know, that they could have some association with their parents. And I believe that they should have, and they deserve to have, you know.
But is there not a bit of a societal or cultural push to be married early? Like, there are children who are married at 14 years old, correct?
No.
No, there's not. There's never been a child who's been married at 14 in your group.
I think that the only person that I know of that ever has was the day before their 15th birthday, and the circumstances were such that, I mean, it was a young lady and she married a very young man, and that was what they wanted to do, and that's just what they did, you know.
Right.
But to say that that's the norm is not correct.
No.
In fact, prior to 1998, and probably 96, 97, prior to that, you know, people were quite old, really, in our society before they got married.
Right, right. So, I mean, because that is one part of the impression that we get out of the group, is that they're being married fairly young. I mean, 15 is fairly young, would you not say?
Yeah, if in fact that's still basically happening. I mean, you can go down to the government agent here in the province of British Columbia, and with your parent's signature, any 16-year-old can get a marriage license.
Right. What happens?
And,
oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yep.
And then when they do and they're married, they're deemed to be adults, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm not sure of that.
Well, they can make every decision for themselves, except go get drunk legally.
Right. Right. What happens if somebody says, you know what, I don't want to live in this community. I don't want to live this lifestyle. I don't want to. Let's say one of your wives has a child. And And that child grows up and says, you know what, I don't want to live this way. I don't want to be married at a younger age, or I don't want to have multiple wives. I'd like to leave this community.
Oh, well, then I'd be the very first person to help them do that. In fact, I've helped people do that. And, you know, I have a daughter of my own that feels that way, and that's, I respect that. I love her dearly.
So you have a daughter who's left the community of Bountiful?
Yeah, she doesn't, well... Yes, she's doing something else with her life.
Right, but still living in the community or no?
No, she's not.
Right, and how is the relationship with her? Is it broken down a bit because she's left, or is it fantastic?
No, it isn't. I have a very good relationship with my children.
What kind of relationship do you have with your first wife, I think, is someone who has maybe left and is maybe speaking out against this lifestyle. Is that right? Is her name Jane, I think?
Yeah, it is. She's a very fine, wonderful person, and I see her every now and again, and, you know, I respect her choice.
But she left you, I guess. Is that how it went?
Yeah, she did. And she left our faith, but she left behind, she and I, we have seven beautiful children, and all but the two youngest are married off, and you know, we have something that we'll forever enjoy, and that is our beautiful grandchildren.
So there is no strain in that relationship? I mean, she's certainly been speaking with the press, and
I don't know what she says because I don't even read it anymore, you know?
Right.
So, but I still require that my children honor and love their mother, and in doing that, they show me the honor that children should show.
Right.
You know, their father.
Winston, do you have custody of the children?
Our children are grown up, with the exception of our youngest, who's just turning 12.
Right, but after the divorce with your first wife, who had custody of the children?
There was only one child.
Oh, okay.
And she has the child.
She has the child.
But I have great access to her. And
yeah.
And that's great.
What is the divorce scenario? I mean, we're talking about multiple marriages here. And how do you define the phrase adultery then?
I would define it exactly the same way that anyone does, that it's a sexual relationship outside of a marriage vow.
Right.
So
therefore, this doesn't come across your plate as something that goes against what you believe, because if you want to have sex with someone, you're not going to have sex with them outside of marriage. You're going to be married, and then sex is fine with them, correct?
Well, I think that's why people get married, don't they?
Oh, you think people get married to have sex?
Well, I think that they get married so that they can have a family, don't they?
Well,
which implies intimacy is implied in marriage, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is, sure, yeah, but I mean, obviously there's multiple reasons why people get married, and I think that's
just
sure.
Still, but intimacy is implied, isn't it?
It is. That,
yeah, so, yeah. So I don't think that it's, you know, that it should apply any differently to our situation.
Right. Yeah, it's something, what is it, Winston, what is it about the rest of us why can't we just get this? Why don't we look at you and go, Winston, wow, what a neat thing, it's all about family and raising kids, and it's like Little House on the Prairie, and you guys, I don't know, grow your own gardens, make your own clothes, and everything's just peachy keen out and bountiful. How come part of our mind still goes, hold on a second, this isn't right?
I don't know, because it's probably the same part of our minds that says that about Bill C-38, and probably the same part of our mind that says that about the First Nations people, and part of our minds that says it about the 875 other cultures in the world that practice polygamy. We say we just don't get this. I mean, how could you 875 other cultures not be as enlightened as our culture in Canada, which believes in marriage of one man to one woman, and yet has all kinds of statistics like that the average normal Canadian woman in her lifetime has 9 different sexual trading partners. And, you know, I mean, and the man, I think, has got 12. Hmm. And so that's the average. Those are statistics you can get off the web.
Sure. Well, I think, Winston, bottom line for me is when I think about this from a relational point of view, purely a relational point of view. If I was to spend time with another woman, whether I was married with her to her or not, my wife would not appreciate that.
Oh, well, I don't imagine that she would.
So
and
you,
that's your you know, that's your right to feel that way, just the same way as it's the right of the 875 other us cultures who feel like that it is a fine thing. And you know what? All every woman everywhere isn't jealous, I mean, of the situation. There's lots of people in those cultures that are doing something to promote their culture, you know?
Right, right.
So
So what you're saying is because my wife and I naturally feel that it is our responsibility as followers of Christ to be monogamous, to have relations only with each other, to have sex only with each other, to grow intimately only with each other, that's just sort of a natural thing for us, whereas for you it's natural to just think the opposite, which is, okay, more wives the better.
No, actually, I don't think the more wives the better.
Oh.
I feel like that I, you know, as growing up in our life and our lifestyle and our faith, which is just as important to me as your faith is to you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just as important to the people of Islam. I mean, their faith is as important to them as ours is to us, or any of those other cultures that practice and believe in the same things that we do.
Sure, sure.
I mean, I don't understand them, really. But, you know, I don't understand, in the wildest stretch, I don't understand the same-gendered marriages, and yet I positively refuse to allow my family to criticize those people.
Right, right.
So because I don't allow that, I don't understand that, but I'm not going to sit in judgment on them, and you and I can both quote Bible scriptures that would make a judgment call against them, but that's neither my business nor yours, I think.
Winston, I've got another quick question for you, and then I've got a co-host in the studio named Mark who wants to ask you a question. But my first question is, who decides who marries whom?
Well, you know, traditionally in our faith, the ministry had some active part in that, but throughout my ministry of 20-some odd years, well, I unashamedly help the people try to figure out something that'll work for them, and I do that.
But bottom line is, I've heard that you choose who marries whom. I've heard that you said, okay, Billy, Susan, that you and her, you're going to get married. That's the decision.
Well, I've heard that too.
So you're saying that's a lie?
Well, I'm saying that as a minister, if someone comes along and asks me about that they want to get married in their life, well then,
if Billy wants to marry Susan, but you think Billy should marry, I can't think of another name, Elaine. Why can't I have any names come to my head?
Yeah,
I know.
There's got to be more than one woman.
Yeah, that's right. But you think he should marry Elaine? Can Billy marry Susan?
No, actually, here's a little better scenario for you. If Billy wants to marry Susan, the first thing I want to know is, does Susan want to marry Billy?
Right.
And so.
So she has some say in this.
Well, she does have a say, and if she doesn't, well then, I want to know why. Eh?
Yeah.
So, but Billy, he really can't. The world is full of Billies that want to marry all the Susans out there.
Right.
But the world isn't full of Susans that want to marry all the Billies.
Okay, I just got to wrap that one through my head. What's the main difference between you and the fundamentalists? Like, is there a discrepancy between the Mormon stuff down in Utah and what you guys are doing up there? Is there one group that's more fundamental than the other? And what are the main differences? Did you not break away from them, or they broke away from you, or how did it work?
Like the mainstream LDS?
Yeah.
Well, the mainstream LDS church, they basically disposed of plural marriages in 1890. They through their fourth president, President Woodruff, and you know they made a compromise for statehood, and it's all documented, and you know, it has nothing to do with me. I obviously wasn't around in 1890, and yet, you know, they have a totally different marriage lifestyle, I think. I have some siblings that belong to that church, and I respect and honor them and love them dearly, and you know, and it's a good place. It's a good place to raise your family, and it's a good organization. And
but is there not still some polygamist groups that are part of the Utah community that you differ with?
Well, like the FLDS. The FLDS? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. All I know is that there is two branches and you broke away from them.
Actually, I didn't break away from them.
Okay.
Like, we're still being what we were.
So how do they differ? How do they differ? What's the difference?
Well, they, you know, their society is quite closed. It's a very secretive society, and it's...
Okay, so you're more...
Don't associate with anybody else, you know?
Right, so you're more open, and they're more fundamentalist, maybe more legalistic, and you're more kind of with it, so to speak.
Well, I don't know that. I don't want to criticize them, because I don't really understand. Their new leader has taken them in a direction that is definitely a departure from
what you guys think, okay.
From what we ever were.
Okay, Winston, this is Mark. Mark's just going to ask you a couple of questions, then we'll let you go. I know your time is pressed. So, Mark, go ahead with Winston.
Hi, Winston. How are you?
Hi. Just fine, Mark. How are you?
Mark's Australian, so forgive his ignorance.
You may not understand me. Hey, I'm just wondering that your title is Bishop. Is that right?
Actually, that's kind of what I'm known from internationally.
Right.
I mean... They did. I think CBC called me the Bishop of Bountiful back in 91 or 92, and everybody knows me by that name. And I still do all the duties I ever did in the ministry, and I don't really care about that.
But within your faith, are you an overseer of people?
Like an elder of some sort?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Like I'm in the ministry, yes.
Yeah.
So then, from a Bible perspective, I'm a pastor myself. Thank goodness my wife Susan only knew Mark, and Mark only knew Susan.
Yeah.
There was no Billy involved there. So, but like, I'm sure the listeners out there are going, like, how does a bishop, overseer of your faith community, read 1 Timothy 3, where it says an overseer or a deacon must be a husband of one wife?
Well, the way that we interpret that is they must have at least one. Because otherwise, you know, they're out there involved in all kinds of situations. I'll give you the Brigham Young definition.
He said, and
Brigham Young was the second president of the LDS people, and he said, a bishop must at least be a married person. Because they're going to be in all kinds of compromising situations. And
but isn't adding at least adding it? In other words, it doesn't say at least, it says one, does it not, Mark?
Yeah. I guess there's biblical
interpretation. Actually, all I was doing with you guys, Mark, and I mean, I don't know where Matthew, Luke, and John are, but I'm just basically telling you what is a part of our our Brigham Young.
Yeah, and we're just trying to figure out the justification behind it and how, you know, again, because the Bible, you say the Bible is a book of direction and of holy supernatural influence in your lives, correct?
But let me ask you guys this.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys both have solid monogamous relationships,
with wives.
With your wife, with your one wife. I mean, Mark and Susan, as he basically said. But biblically, I mean, I think it would be a little bit presumptive for you to try to convince me that you as well as all your listening audience have never had any other sexual interaction with anyone else other than your own chaste situation right now. And so,
absolutely. I think that I can't speak for all the listening audiences, but I think that that many people out there have had other sexual relations. That's true. All have sinned.
Since, I mean, God doesn't look upon sin with the least degree of allowance, and yet because people sin, he has to make allowances. And I mean, in my ministry, if I become so close focused on people's sins, that you can't help them administer the redeeming blood of Christ, who helps people through all of their sins and helps them focus and think and move on with their lives. Hey, this world is full of all kinds of people, and they have all kinds of problems. And
right, but Winston, what I think,
and they have all kinds of cultures and traditions, Drew.
Yeah.
And it requires that the people who can make a difference and affect hundreds, if not thousands, of people's lives, that they actually go ahead and do all that they can for them.
I think I just heard. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I just heard you say, "Yes, God knows we're going to struggle with being monogamous, so He's made allowances."
No, He's made allowance for people who have sins, that they can that they can actually have a full and complete and a whole a forgiven life.
Okay, so you're saying that God is forgiving of our sins. He's not sort of saying, oh, I know that's a sin, but you know, I'll just turn a blind eye or anything. You're not saying that.
Well, I'm referencing you to the fact that here you are, you're in this very close and loving closed relationship. But without saying it, you may have had a previous relationship, or your companion may have had a previous relationship, or they may not have been Christian, or they may have been something other than what your faith and your beliefs are right now, and yet that's the whole, to me, that's the whole interesting makeup of society.
Yeah.
Because you know, our lifestyle captures hurt people as well, people who have been hurt in other societies or in other relationships. And you know, as a minister, if I just basically said, oh no, you're a sinner.
But Winston, surely you're not saying that all the people in Bountiful Community are hurt people in hurt relationships who have sinned?
No, I'm not. I'm just referring
to... No, he's not saying that, and stop calling him Shirley.
Anyway.
Good one, Drew.
Thank you. Go ahead, Winston.
So I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that I don't want you to just get away with thinking that I'm so strange when I feel like that, you know, you're also dealing with situations yourself, and that truly makes up the diversity of our Canadian culture. I'm so thankful to be a Canadian and proud of to be able to live in this good land. And if they want to spend the public money trying to pursue polygamists because there's a law against polygamy, they would better spend it, you know, on health care, I would think, because, you know, our society is full of, society at large, I mean the Canadian society,
yeah,
it's full of all kinds of problems that are greater than the one of polygamy.
Does being a polygamist, or does the being a man of many wives have any direct correlation with your spiritual success? In other words, if you're not a man who is married to many wives, does that have any detrimental effect on your spiritual destination?
I don't believe that it does.
Okay, so in other words...
And that's one of the things the media has picked up on. They think somebody has to have three wives, and I totally disagree with that.
Right.
I just totally don't believe that it's the case.
Is there anybody in your community that's only married to one wife?
Oh, the major part of them are.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, there's a few, you know, the few that have more wives than one, but the major part of them don't.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that it is.
Okay. Well, listen, your battery's dying, and we've got a million questions, but we'll leave you alone. Winston Blackmore, I certainly have appreciated you coming on the show. To me, it's the most important thing to be able to get primary resource information. In other words, hear it from the horse's mouth instead of hearing what a bunch of Jesus people are saying about you guys.
Okay. Well, I really enjoyed this interview, and you can do it again when I have a strong battery.
Okay. Thanks, Winston.
Okay, thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
There you have it, folks. We have just spoken with somebody who is married to many wives and feels it's okay. Of course, coming from the Mormon background, the Mormon doctrine. Want to get your opinion on this when we come back from our break, 905-338-1250. What do you think about the polygamist lifestyle? What did you think about what Winston Blackmore said during that interview? 905-338-1250. Any comments about being married to many wives, other than I still think it's crazy just from the hassle point of view? Do I get an amen there, Mark?
Amen.
Okay. We'll be right back, folks. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show. Coming up very soon, an interview with Stephen Baldwin.